And welcome everyone to another edition of the John Kirkland Show. This is episode 2. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, all my listeners for tuning in this morning. It is currently 5:30 in the morning. And this is a beautiful morning. It's actually a little it's a little warm to me for it to be 5:30 in the morning, but here we are. A couple of things I kind of want to touch on. It's kind of more so the basketball, so I'm going to be kind of like touching some different areas in terms of like NFL, NBA, and kind of like comparing like the old school to the new school. So today is kind of like one of those days where it's like it's Friday, you know, I kind of want to shake it up a little bit, keep the topic interesting. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. So starting with the NBA, outside of this podcast, I work a 9-to-5 as well, and I was sitting down, I was talking with my manager one day, and we were talking about Golden State, the structure of the team. We talked about why Kevin Durant left. We talked about would I trade Draymond Green and why, what direction would I go in terms of the NBA draft even this year, how important is it for Wiggins to step up, or is he a trade commodity? So there was just a lot of conversation that we had in terms of what we would do. And again, I had to put my GM, you know, hat on, because you got to make it make sense. Some people at random do just say some nonsense that, you know, really just doesn't make sense. But I'm going to tap into that same conversation. So the question was for me was, starting with the NBA draft, if you're Myers, I think that's his name for the, I think he's the GM for the Warriors. What's your first thing? What are you going to do this offseason, knowing the state of the Warriors and where they're at? Well, what I would do is, if I'm the GM, the first thing I have to do is look at our trade assets. I have to look at our long-term cash flow in terms of our money being tied into players for the next, you know, however many years. I got to look at the money we're paying Andrew Wiggins. I have to look at, in terms of drafting, if this player's not available, do we go down to the next player, or do we trade out of the pick, get an additional pick, and maybe get somewhat equivalent to what we could have gotten in the draft? However, in August, that's where the lottery ball will drop. And I was making the comment that just because you are in the top five in terms of the lottery, you know, when the lottery ball drops, doesn't mean you're going to get the number one pick just because you have the worst record in the NBA. I mean, we've seen the Cavaliers get the number one pick 3 times in a row, and the Knicks have had the worst record on God's green earth for many, many years, and they still haven't had a number one pick. So we've seen how that ball dropped. We've seen how those things went. However, I like the direction that the Warriors are going in terms of their youth. I think that they need to invest more into their youth, because long term, that's what's going to help Curry, the veterans. That's what's going to help them out. Do I believe Draymond Green should be traded? Yes, Draymond Green should be traded. Here's why. I get the fact that, and I'm going to look at it from 2 different standpoints, and I'm going to get into Kevin Durant in a minute. But when you talk about Draymond Green, Draymond Green has been a huge part of what the Warriors have been doing for many years in terms of winning, in terms of championships. But when you have a guy like Draymond Green outside of basketball, in terms of, you know, that's your emotional leader, that's whoever he is. But at the same time, it's like, how do you tell the second best player in the game today, we were winning championships without you? And this is one. This is 50% of the reason why Kevin Durant is no longer with Golden State. So I do believe, and then it was like he had said he didn't like the way Kevin Durant handled things because of the fact that he decided to leave, and he knew he was leaving. He knew that long before he even left. Well, my thing with Draymond is, it's your fault. It's your fault. Clearly, it's your fault. You're the one who made him feel like, hey, you know, we can win without you. And now the Warriors have to win now. They have to win. There's no doubt about it. They have to win now because you what you said. Now imagine, ladies and gentlemen, the championships, the constant championships that Golden State could have won. And I'm not just talking about in the Toronto series. I'm talking about even going forward, even as of now. Even as of now, like looking at the fact that they could win 5 in a row, been close to the Bulls dynasty. When you think about that, thinking about Draymond Green, is that the letdown? If you're a Warriors fan, for me, I don't care. I don't want to see them win, no way. So, I mean, for me, it's like, okay, no big deal. But what I was talking to my manager about was the fact that what would I do about Draymond Green and where would I trade him? Well, I had said that I would trade him to Detroit for Blake Griffin. And I would, and there's a lot that would go into that. So what I would do is I would trade Draymond Green and I would trade Draymond Green to Detroit for a unprotected first round pick, future unprotected first round pick and Blake Griffin. So that means that I'm absorbing Blake Griffin's contract. So if I'm absorbing that contract, I need an unprotected first round pick. What does that mean? What that means is that I'm going to get some type of insurance to where if he has any knee injuries, if we're on the hook for something, and I think that he doesn't have that long left on his deal, maybe a year, maybe 2 years left or whatever, that's a contract I'm willing to accept. Now, you say, well, why would you do that? Well, the reason why I would do that is because look at what Blake Griffin can do. Imagine what he can do in terms of his athleticism, in terms of his defense, in terms of him. He can actually help the team spread the floor. He doesn't have to do a whole lot, but defend and score when it's his chance to score. He can shoot the mid-range jumper. He's came a long way since his LA Clipper days. So I like Blake for Golden State, and I think Golden State is instantly a top two team in the West ASAP the moment they make that trade. Now, are they a top two team now with just Draymond Green? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Are they a top four team? Absolutely. But that's if they're healthy. That's if they're healthy, clearly, if they're healthy. If they're not healthy, then it's not even worth discussing. Now, another question they have for me, and they've been asking me this for like probably like the last 2 months because they know I'm a Lakers fan. So they said, John, do you believe that this is the Lakers' only year to win? And if so, do they win? If they don't win, what does that mean for Anthony Davis, and does Anthony Davis leave? My answer was the Lakers will win the title this year for sure. I think that they're on track. I have to give a lot of credit to Rob Pelinka and what he's done with that organization. I thought we were just going to be a toilet bowl team, to be honest with you. But what he has done, the trades he has made, were so much better. And I think the direction that he's pointing this team into is pretty awesome. I can't say another guy or another GM or, you know, because I don't think Kurt Rambis could have done this. I don't think Kurt Rambis or any other person could have done this. And you got to give Jeannie Buss a lot of credit for allowing Rob Pelinka to get in there and do his thing. I was very critical of Rob Pelinka because I didn't think a sports agent can do this. And I still don't think sports agents can do this. Rob Pelinka is kind of one of the, you know, very few who's really came in and shown exactly what he can do in terms of being a GM or being vice president of operations or whatever his title is. But however, he's done a fantastic job with the Lakers. And I think we also got to give LeBron James credit. I mean, he was hurt last year. Look at he just went on a tear this year. He looks great. Phenomenal shape. If you look at AD, Anthony Davis is playing extremely well. He's fantastic in what he brings. And there's another person I want to give a shout out to that doesn't get a whole lot of credit to, and that's Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard does not get any of the credit he deserves. I mean, this guy has came. People didn't even want to give him a chance. The Lakers gave him a chance, and he balled out on a non-guaranteed contract. And he's balling out. I mean, his athleticism as well, rim protector, same thing with AD. Those two guys, the Twin Towers, oh, man. I just think that we're so much bigger down low. The loss of Avery Bradley is tough for me. I was very critical of him too. I thought Avery Bradley could probably defend. His defense was probably, you know, pretty good. My problem with Avery Bradley was the fact that I didn't like his shooting. His shooting to me was horrible. You got to make shots, you know, especially against the Clippers, the Warriors, Portland, some of the top tier teams in the West. You got to make jumpers, man, when you get the opportunity. So, but now we have new players, J.R. Smith, Deion Waiters. We got those guys. So do I think the Lakers are going to win the championship? Absolutely. I think the Lakers, I will say this to all my listeners. I will say this, and I think it will become clear at that point. If the Lakers beat the Clippers in the playoffs, we're going to win the championship, because that's the only team right now that stands in our way is the Clippers. If we get by the Clippers, the Lakers will win the title. LeBron James will get MVP again, and AD will sign maybe a short-term deal with the Los Angeles Lakers to see if they can do it again. And as long as LeBron's playing on the Lakers, and as long as his full commitment is with Los Angeles, I do believe AD will be back. Especially if they win the title, for sure. There's no doubt in my mind he will be back, for sure. Absolutely. So those are, you know, some of the questions that were presented to me. The other question was in terms of Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. The thing is this: it makes me upset that people will disrespect Michael Jordan, disrespect Kobe Bryant, and compare them. Michael Jordan was already winning championships long before LeBron got into the league, long before Kobe Bryant got into the league. It's just not fair to compare Michael Jordan. It's not. The game was different. The game has evolved and changed since Michael Jordan has played. Even in Michael Jordan's prime, the game has evolved. Because if you think about it, look at what's going on today. You have point guards getting triple doubles. Back then in Jordan's era, you didn't see that. If you saw a triple-double, it's because Michael Jordan had a phenomenal game. And Magic Johnson had more assists than anybody in the league. And John Stockton, that's all he did was pass. And Gary Payton had lockdown defense. And I mean, the list goes on. Tim Hardaway, you know, I mean, the list goes on. I can sit here all day and give you all the point guards. But the reality of it is this. I would never compare Kobe Bryant to Michael Jordan for this reason. One is the fact that two different eras, two different styles of play, and the game has evolved since then. Now, Kobe Bryant is somebody that we'll never see in the NBA again in terms of his ability to play. His desire to win every single game, every single night. And for 20 years, this man has played 82 games a season. For 20 years. That is incredible. The man's won 5 NBA championships in 20 years. You got people that play in the league for 20 years and never even get it. So that is awesome. There's no doubt about what Kobe Bryant meant to the league and what he's done. A lot of people emulate him. Now, when you talk about, when you make a comparison in terms of style of play, now we have a real conversation. Now we can talk about style of play in comparison. Yeah, sure. But I think when you're talking about legacy and you're talking about who's better, that's not even a topic of a conversation. I would never entertain a conversation like that. I think it's bogus. However, when you talk about style of play, Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan are similar. They have similar games, especially with the fadeaway, their relentless desire to win. I could see Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant for sure. that is the ne- that was the next Michael Jordan for sure. LeBron James, to me, LeBron James is more. I would compare LeBron James to Magic Johnson. Why? Because LeBron James, he could play all five positions if he had to. I mean, look at LeBron James now. He's playing point guard. That's not his position, but he's playing point. So that lets you know if LeBron James had to play a particular position, he'd play it. Magic Johnson played all five positions, especially when Kareem got hurt. When you look at LeBron James' passing, it's very similar to the way Magic Johnson played, the way Magic Johnson passed the ball, if you think about it. And you might, for argument, in terms of passing, just on the level of passing, you might be able to put Jason Kidd in there. In terms of passing, you might be able to put Jason Kidd in there. But as of right now, I think LeBron James and Magic Johnson, in terms of style of play, yes, I would compare that. I think that's fair. In terms of style of play, not legacy, no. Now, NFL, I kind of want to get into this because I constantly debate with people. I like doing that. It's pretty fun for me. In terms of quarterbacks, when you compare quarterbacks today, style of play, versus back then, what would you say? What I would say is this. Who's the toughest quarterback I've ever seen play the game since maybe 88, 89? I would have to say Brett Favre. I think Brett Favre is the toughest quarterback I've ever seen play the game. I would say behind him was Steve Young. You can knock Steve Young's lights out, and he's going to throw a pass to Jerry Rice for the touchdown, and the 49ers would win. As a kid, I'd see that and be just so upset, so angry. It would make me so mad. But those were one of the two toughest quarterbacks I've ever seen play the game. In terms of a running back, I would have to say Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders was a phenomenal running back. I mean, I don't know. I used to watch him play with the Lions and used to think, wow, no one's going to catch this guy. I mean, just his footwork was amazing. And when you compare the running back position now in terms of footwork, we'll never see that again. And that's what I was saying in terms of evolvement, that the game has evolved since then. To me, I think the game has evolved into one dimensional because Barry Sanders gave you finesse. Barry Sanders was like, look, if you tackle me, you got to earn that tackle. It's going to be hard to get me. And he was like that at Oklahoma State. I believe in 88, he was like that. I think he broke some serious records at Oklahoma State back in 88. I liked Emmitt Smith. I thought Emmitt Smith was incredible as well. I thought he was a very good quarterback. I'm not quarterback, sorry, running back. I thought he was a very, very good running back. Alongside with Barry Sanders. I hear a lot of this. People want to talk about Walter Payton and Jim Brown. And I don't think it's fair to have that conversation with Jim Brown and Walter Payton. Those guys, I mean, that's just a different breed. That was a whole total different class that opened the doors for the Barry Sanders, the Emmitt Smiths, in my opinion. The best football team, I would have to say back then, the best football team to me back then when I was growing up, I would have to probably say the 49ers and the Cowboys. Because, and the reason why I say that is because it was either one of those teams in the Super Bowl every single year. You were going to get one or the other guaranteed every year. You were going to get one of those teams. The heartbreaking part was when Dallas would go to Candlestick and lose to the 49ers. I used to be like, you gotta be joking. You got to be joking. I used to hate going to school, and you would see so many 49er fans. And these are the same kids that didn't even talk about the 49ers the week before, leading up to the game. And I used to get so upset and just like, man. You know, but then when we won, it was always quiet because I was the only fan, you know, so it was interesting. But those were the two. The game has evolved in such a way where you don't see that anymore. The way the game has evolved is that you're always going to get a team that you didn't see coming. Like, for example, the Titans went to the AFC Championship game. Now, when you look at the beginning of the year and you look at the body of work in terms of their roster, you're going to overlook the Titans and say, you kidding me? Titans is not going to the AFC Championship. It's not going to happen. You're thinking it's going to be Baltimore. You're thinking it's going to be Kansas City Chiefs. You're thinking it's going to be Denver or whoever. But you're not. It's going to be anybody but the Titans. And that was the interesting part to me was that they were the underdogs the whole time, and we didn't even see it coming. And back then, the difference was that there was no such thing as underdogs. Either you were going to make it or you didn't. Either you were good or you were not. And it showed. I think the Packers came on a little bit later on in the 90s, maybe 94, 95, somewhere around there. You had Brett Favre. Brett Favre was a quarterback that made everybody better. And that's why the Packers were so good at one particular time. It's because of what he brought to the table. Now, you bring another quarterback in, I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. Moving on to baseball. I'm going to say this. In terms of outfielders, in terms of hitting, I would say this. I would say Ken Griffey Jr. was a player that everybody wanted to be like. If you were playing baseball, you wanted number 24, for sure. You wanted 24, for sure. If you were playing baseball, you wanted the shoes, you wanted the glove, you wanted the hat. I've seen people that were Seattle Mariner fans that never even been to Seattle in their life. Seattle, at that particular time, with Ken Griffey, Martinez, those guys were really, really good. They just had a hard time beating those Yankees. Randy Johnson, the big unit, one of my favorite pitchers of all time. But Ken Griffey Jr. was a player that there'll never be another one like him. But there's a lot of good center fielders, a lot of good outfielders, even like today. But to me, the difference between Ken Griffey Jr. and the outfielders that we're looking at today is the fact that Ken Griffey Jr. made the position look so easy. So easy. He was incredible. I mean, he could dive, make plays. He used to run up the wall and rob you at the wall. His athletic ability was like second to none. So, and I'm not taking nothing away from Mark McGwire, not taking nothing away from Sammy Sosa. Those guys were phenomenal. Even Barry Bonds, who should be in the Hall of Fame right now. I disagree with the Hall of Fame, not putting him in there. He deserves to be there. They're not trying to let him in due to the Balco situation. My thing is this. Balco cannot make you hit the ball over the gate. Either you can do it or you cannot. As simple as that. So for them not to allow him to be in the Hall of Fame, I think it's just bogus and ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. But back to Ken Griffey Jr. again. The only thing that he didn't get was a world championship that I really wanted him to get. The Yankees were tough. The Atlanta Braves were tough. Even growing up, the Braves were tough. I mean, they had Greg Maddux, John Smoltz. From top to bottom in terms of their pitching unit was phenomenal. Same thing with the Yankees. I used to root for the Yankees at one particular time. But being a Dodgers fan, a diehard, it was hard because, you only get to watch them when they play the Giants. And other than that, you don't see them. So that was kind of difficult in terms of being a fan, but I'm a Dodgers fan for sure. So hopefully we can get this championship. They're starting the season, 60 games. Everybody's done with testing. So hopefully we get a chance to see the Dodgers get back to the championship, and hopefully we can win this time. Moving on to boxing. And I'm going to talk about boxing just for the moment. I want people to realize this. A lot of people talk about the best heavyweights, welterweights. I'm going to say this. Who is the best fighter of all time? There's so many candidates for that. And I can only speak for my era, and I think that's fair to say. My era is a couple of fighters. But the number one fighter that has constantly proven it over and over again, and I would have to say Floyd Mayweather. I would have to say because he's beaten the people in my era, and he's beat them decisively. So being the best, you've seen it over and over again. He's beaten the Mosleys, the De La Hoyas, the Pacquiao's. He's beaten all those guys. And so how is he not the best when he's beaten the best? If you think about it, he's been world champion 19 years out of the 20 years he's been boxing. How's that not great? In terms of error, we must remember, in terms of error, it's a little bit different. Mike Tyson, to me, I would have to say Mike Tyson was the best heavyweight I've ever seen. He was the youngest to ever win the World Heavyweight Championship. But then you had Lennox Lewis, and I thought Lennox Lewis was right there. Evander Holyfield, I would say, was number three. I would say is number three, but in terms of the best, Mike Tyson, hands down. I mean, that guy was incredible. Just the way people would just fall, man, fall like trees. Everybody, I mean, one punch and you were done. And people used to get mad about the fights because one punch and it was over in 50 seconds. And people paid $50 to see his fights on pay-per-views. Outstanding. But the thing I liked about Lennox Lewis was I liked his fundamentals. He was a fundamentally sound boxer. That's what I liked about him at the heavyweight division. He always had that jab. That jab was a tough jab he had. And then Evander Holyfield, what I liked about Evander was I like the adjustments he made in the fight. I've seen him fight George Foreman. I've seen him fight Lennox Lewis. I've seen him fight some of the best fighters in the world. And I think that he got Mike Tyson at the tail end of Tyson's career. I don't think he should have got Tyson a lot sooner than that, and that would have been huge. But that fight never happened. But I'm just glad that they were able to fight at all, and they fought twice, and it was kind of like one of those whatever fights, just to get it over with. First of all, I also want to talk about Oscar De La Hoya. Before Oscar De La Hoya lost to Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, Oscar De La Hoya at one particular time was a tough fighter, and he won a lot of titles. That guy won a lot of titles. I think ever since he fought Floyd Mayweather, I think that's when things started kind of derailing for him, and I think that's why he hates Mayweather so much. I remember the fight with De La Hoya in Trinidad, and De La Hoya has put up some great performances. Win or lose, he's had some great performances. He's had a great career. I think a lot of people kind of just overlook the fact that, you know, at one particular time, De La Hoya was the top dog in this business. And even Bernard Hopkins was tough. Roy Jones Jr. was tough as well. But he was more flashy. He was more of the, you know, but he got the job done. For sure, he got the job done. There was no doubt about that. So there's a lot of fighters, I think, in different eras, play different keys and, carry different torches within their careers. But when you talk about the best, for sure, it's Floyd Mayweather. When people bring up Muhammad Ali and all those people, that's kind of a different, that's kind of like way out of my element, way out of my era. So I can only speak on my era. But I do want to say this. Manny Pacquiao, I think a lot of people don't even know, but Manny Pacquiao has had 64 victories. 64 victories, 7 losses, and he's still fighting. So I just want to let the fans know, let my listeners know, he's still fighting 64 victories. There's not a fighter on the planet right now that has 64 victories right now that's actively fighting right now. So I just kind of want to leave that there. Granted, he lost to Floyd Mayweather, but when I watched Manny Pacquiao fight against Keith Thurman, that guy was looking like he was 20 years old. So just want to throw that out there. But again, the best fighter for me of all time, Floyd Mayweather. I want to thank everybody who took the time out to listen to my show this morning. I look forward to continue bringing my show, the John Kirkland Show. Again, you can tune in weekdays, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. You can also make your comments on my Twitter page at John Kirkland Second, John Kirkland Show. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you on Monday.